Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome to the On The Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. I want to thank everybody for being here today. We have had such a marvelous week, some interesting discussions. So first of all, giving thanks to God for giving us another day of life. I want to thank my team, Lady Diamond, Elaine Yeves, DJ Domek, Rodney Williams, Monster Miles, and our activists and panelists in Toledo, Ohio, Deacon Zeddy Williams for all that they do. Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 Kiss FM Radio. You can hear him now on iFloRadio.com doing his thing on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m. and again on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. And when he's off the radio, he is gracing New York with the best of live R&B events all over the best of venues as the CEO of Track One Entertainment. Barry has some things coming up, ladies and gentlemen. So hit him up on Facebook at Barry Mason or go over to his website at track1entertain.com and catch up with his latest events. I want to say thank you to my listeners out there in the social media network, the On The Edge Listeners Club, Listeners Lounge. You guys have been marvelous as a support group since we've got started. I want to thank the What About Us group with our own Professor Carlton Jones. I want to thank the Urban Intellectuals Open Discussions group with Patrick Irvine. And you guys have been hot off the wires today, so I want to thank you very much for an intriguing pre-broadcast discussion. To Linda Miller and the Black Love and Conversations group and our wonderful sponsor, Mark Pittman, with his two groups, the Real World Black Love and Discussions Group, the Real World Black News and Discussions Group, and the Black History Suppressed Group, and also Marvin Young with the Capitalist N Group. Moving on to our sister stations, we want to thank Devon Lewis and the 93.1 Jam Pack Radio in Toledo, Ohio, which syndicates this show every Sunday from 3 to 5 p.m., and to Jason Dowd and the AMFM247.com network, who not only syndicates us through web radio, but has 5 terrestrial stations, I believe is up to 7 now, all over the United States. And he syndicates us every Wednesday from 7 to 9 p.m. So thank you guys for all of that. To my panelists, Professor Carlton Jones, Stalo Jenkins, Altariq Atkins, Deacon Zeddy Williams, Patrick Irvine, Darlene and Arlene, you guys have been phenomenal in keeping this going. And, of course, our newest fire plug, Miss Erica Talbert, for all that she's been offering on and off the air and for just her natural passion for things to change. So I want to thank all of you for that. All right? Last night it was hot. We were speaking on how our elder children have responsibilities that may turn them into adults before their time. However, by the show's end, those of you who wrote me in about it today, by the show's end, we wind up having to deal with a load of ignorance and proof of exactly why this show exists and what we speak on that is alive and well and with flesh and blood running through their veins. So I want to thank all of you who tweeted and Facebooked me a whole bunch of support with regards to it, but don't worry, I'm okay. We're all good. This is just my way of showing you all on both ends of the Hugh funding color spectrum just how much this particular situation, which is tonight's topic that we will be speaking on. So moving on to what tonight's topic is about, our episode tonight is entitled Racism Peekaboo, I See You and I See You Not. We are going to be discussing how everybody walks around this big elephant in the room of society called racism, how whites and blacks alike, both similarly and differently, handle it, how a lot of us don't want to speak about it or call it what it is. A lot of people want to talk about everything around the actual problem, about removing the beast from the room instead of making it the most protected species in our land. And that is the issue that we're going to be speaking on tonight. So I expect and hopefully everything should go okay. Have our two awesome panelists be on our guest speaker list tonight, and that will be Professor Carlton Jones and Stalo Jenkins, and I'm very interested in hearing what it is that they feel about this whole situation. Now, we're going to be going out tonight with Chris Brown and Fine China, and when we get back, after him and a word from our sponsors, we will be getting this party together. So don't go away. Keep it locked with Katie. We'll be right back.
No place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote Attorneys at Law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett, and it is discussion time. Racism, peekaboo, I see you not. This is the topic on the table tonight, everyone. So let's get started on what it is we deal with on a daily basis. We have this big, fat elephant in the room of society. That elephant steamrolls, stampedes, bulldozes through our daily lives, mainly and foremost and most targeted on, wait for it, Black America. Notice how everyone tries to talk around it. Everybody tries to allude it to something else. It could be something as blatantly racially saturated as the Trayvon Martin situation, the way that whole trial went, the way people afterwards specifically used Trayvon as a hate page where it's all about niggers, it's all about spooks, it's all about coons. Yes, other races get these slurs and these epithets coming out of these ignorant fools' mouths. However, it's like harmlessly dismissive in passing. None of these epithets that go to these groups are followed they're not followed or escorted by total destruction plans. Those of you that listened in last night, we were speaking, first of all, about a subject that, while it's universal, we were speaking into particular unique aspects of that particular topic as it pertains to the Black community. We were speaking among ourselves, about ourselves, and what did we get? We got a bunch of people who, in their paranoia, their fear, their ignorance, their restricted, like-minded way of thinking amongst themselves, stood there listening, lurking, eavesdropping, spying on a group that's not looking in their direction, that's not speaking on storming their storefronts, that's not thinking about plotting to go out there and rip their babies from their homes, but they stood there listening in the middle of the night on a primetime late-hour show just to call in to display their wonderful receipt of tuition to all these Ivy League schools to show that all that it taught them was the word nigger. And the more that they said it, the more amused they were when they said it. And they do this often, and it's usually about when it's a race topic. They don't call in to have a disagreeing view with some sense and some dignity. They call in to spew the worst side of racism there is. And still in all, there will be people there saying, it doesn't exist. That's not why it is. That's just ignorance. We had a caller on the show the night before speaking on how they can acknowledge that blacks get it bad, that the most unfair handling of things happened specific to blacks, and yet even in that, he couldn't continue to say that racism exists and that blacks have it hard. Everybody can see the beast coming. They can identify it. They can call it by name, but they won't say it by name. They won't discuss it by name. They won't address it. There are people on the white side of the fence got to handle it a certain way. Those that consider themselves not racist because they don't lynch people, they don't call people niggers, they don't walk around, you know, trying to shoot somebody, however, they'd be very paranoid by nature. Should a black person happen to walk by their gated community, just walking by to get to a shortcut to his neighborhood or a neighborhood, their natural reaction is to cover up their coats and cling to their purses a little more when they see a big, tall black man going by them. White America celebrates their garbage and sits there and poops on the celebrations of blacks or keep it down underneath. They'll do everything they can to destroy, go after the most precious thing there is to keep you quiet. Why? Because they're afraid that what we're trying to do for ourselves will eventually be giving us some motivation to go after them. Well, allow me to be the first person, as a member of the black society, white people, to let you know we don't give a damn about what you have. We just want you to leave us alone so that whatever it is that we get, which you keep on putting your hands into and grabbing for, is to give us what's rightfully owed according to the Constitution, to the Congress, to the law, that everybody's entitled and everybody has the right to live and practice the culture of their choice, that everybody has rules to follow about not infringing upon the rights of other people, however you've been doing it for years. We don't want your stuff. As a matter of fact, if you would lower the ignorance and broaden your mind, you might see that allowing us to be successful without blowing us up or exploding on our things or taking our children or putting our kids in jail, you might actually get an extended network of support, that the diversities you're so busy trying to cultivate to your own, trying to pretty it up, whiten it up, snow white it up, can actually be something that can give you some flavor. Can actually be something that you might have more fun in your life. You can relax a little bit. You won't shoot yourselves when you lose your $100,000 a year jobs. You won't have to try to rob your life insurance policies. Perhaps you wouldn't make enemies. You probably have a whole community of people that would at least be able to sit down civilly and come to a community issue that affects us all, because understand, 9/11 took place and there wasn't a white person that was standing next to a black person that the bomb missed. And if your child was collapsed in front of a facility and it just so happened that there was a black doctor that was the first in the scene, would you really want your daughter to die simply to not have those spooks touch your child? Is ignorance and hatred and your paranoia that important? We don't want what you have. And we would clearly like it if you would stop trying to steal what we have. To those of you that this doesn't apply to that are really out there doing something, once again, if they're not your shoes, leave them in the closet. Because clearly we're not talking to you. But I'm not speaking to you closeted bigots either. There and will whisper among your friends in the yacht club or the champagne club and scoot over just a little bit or squeeze yourself into an airspace in an elevator simply so you don't accidentally brush up against them. But you don't call them niggers. You don't shoot them. You just would rather they go away. You would rather not know about how they're being hunted and targeted and hit by a damn group of people that's supposed to police the safety of the whole entire land. But that only applies to people with certain color privilege. This is the part that white people don't want to hear. Now let's talk about my people. We're so afraid of stirring the rattlesnake's nest that we will sit there and take every amount of dehumanization, of family splitting, of emasculating, of effeminizing, of dumbifying, of watering down, of cuts, of invasion they have to offer. We continue to try to convince ourselves that the worm in that apple is really just a brown spot we can cut around and enjoy the rest of the apple, because you know what? Slaves never even got apples back in the days. They might have gotten the cores. You don't think that racism exists? You explain why is it that there would be people sitting in a little old show And the only thing that makes their life go round through all their posh carpets, through all their suburban homes, their acres and acres of land, their million-dollar cars, their expensive gadgets that they can afford to do a family plan, plus the friends and family plan, plus the whatever, and give everybody one for Christmas like it's nothing off the top of their back, would sit there and need to be entertained and have their night complete by calling into a show that's not even broadcast on their personal frequencies to exhibit such idiocy and hatred and cruelty and inhumane crap. So while they do everything they can to call us the worst defiled species, because that's the way they think of us, they still give us the importance by taking out time from their day to call in and try to make sure that their agenda to bring us down is publicized. That they can point out all the good things that we blacks have now. Never mind that we have them, but we can't ever get them. That the people who actually do make it through that closing gate just before the gates lock in our world is sold off or controlled or puppeteered by them. That the only way we can show who we are as a culture is to look like we're whores for their billionaire friends, or that we are cursing each other out, or that we are fighting each other like as grown women across the table, or that we are screwing around every single way, that we don't like our kids, that all we can do is be video vixens, or thugs, or oppressed slaves, that in the end of the movie, the black people always die, because that's the only way they would sponsor us or give us a little bit of what it is that they've already taken and held back from us. So that is what my commentary is about. Now, I have panelists coming in, and I'm going to bring them in, so just hang on 1 second. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Good evening, Katie. This is Al Tariq Atkins calling out of Alabama.
I'm very glad you can make it tonight, sir. 1 second, let me bring in our other panelists. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air. Hello?
Oh, hi. I didn't know I was the next one.
Hi, I'm the system.
Well, I'm known as Tech Violet. I'm in your. I just recently got accepted into your Facebook group, but
okay.
My name is Terry. Yeah, so
hi,
your
Terry. Welcome.
So your commentary.
You'll be second on the mic. You'll be second up on the mic, okay? I got to give the panelists before you.
Okay.
The mic, and then you can join in. Okay, so Al Tariq, the couple of questions that I have, racism, we know it exists. Do you feel that it is, people are afraid to address it, call it what it is, from the white spectrum and the blacks, and I would like for you to tell me how you think that each side handles it, what's similar, what's different?
Well, a lot of people are afraid to deal with it. They rather say that it hardly exists or doesn't exist, you know, instead of addressing it. It's never been properly addressed. You know, we've bandaged it up, you know, and we've never had a real chance to really heal from it. You know, when you look at white folks, you know, not all, but the ones who want to believe that way, they'll say, well, hey, y'all got a black president now. You know, racism is over, or it's about over. You know, what are you complaining for? You know, and I haven't seen much of a difference, rather, if we had the president who we have today or before, because their job is the same, is to protect the United States' interests. And it's always have been in their interest, and how they made the best of their interest was off the backs of their former slaves. So, you know, you have to understand racism in its proper context and also white supremacy in its proper context, because not only do they dominate here, but all across the diaspora we have been subjected to the oppression of them. And no one would like to be labeled as that who want to be seen as a clean person. A person who raped and murdered you, what he's going to do, he's going to try to get away from justice and the law. That's as an individual. So if you look at it just on an individual basis and you look at America on the whole, they don't want to touch that because it taints their clean image. And we are, you know, the baddest part of their history, so they rather put us, sweep it under the rug, than really discuss it because it's so it's such an atrocity and horrific stage, you know, an era that we've been through, that they rather shut it up. See, the Jews and the way they got treated, you know, they can always say, well, we'll never forget. But if black people say, we'll never forget, they'll call us racist. You know, and that's they're wrong. And, I mean, nobody wants to speak about it because also what we have spoke about, that will open the door up to should they be compensated for this unjust and inhumane treatment that we've given them. And no pay for hundreds of years. So that right there, they will have to kill that or keep that so deep down under the rug and also get us and use us who will have certain privileges under them to help keep us in check. So that right there is fear, fear of loss of jobs and all that. When history has shown that when we band together, we can do things. So, yes, it's fear, as you asked earlier. It's a fear there, a fear of change, of us being able to change ourselves because a lot of us don't believe we can do it. So they want to go, everybody wants to be with who's the so-called winning team. But if the winning team starts falling, then who's going to, like how you said one time a while back, if you start falling back, you got to come back to from whence you came. So I say this in all sincerity that everybody who's thinking on that plane and thinking that we're never going to win is sadly mistaken because I do believe in a guy, and he's all about justice. Even one of their own presidents, and I can't say his name right now, but he was the one that had the slaves and had the black woman who he was with. I can't remember his name right now. And he said that he trembled when he thinks that there's a guy and that guy is a god of justice. And his name will come back to me, but I can't remember it right offhand. So I say that people need to get right. They need to stop being in denial. Denial is the biggest tool of a devil. You know,
absolutely.
So if you have a devilish mind state, go ahead and deny everything. But people always say karma, and they always say what goes around comes back around. So if you want things to come back right, you need to treat the people right. So if we can never be treated right and get justice, wouldn't it be fitting that we be redeemed and that someone who's higher than all of us give us the justice that we so need in these days and time with our kids, with schools closing down, where people don't even care? They want to line their pockets. They got all these different drugs out here. Everything's about lining their pockets. So, no, they don't want to discuss racism because if they truly discussed it and they truly wanted to do the right thing, that would take money out of their pockets that their ancestors left a legacy there for them. And for those who say, well, oh, that's not us. We didn't do this to y'all. It was our ancestors. Well, guess what? They set this world up for y'all to have it. So it's still you're involved with it, rather directly or indirectly. And people need to be for real and be truthful and be honest, since everybody always said, oh, we need to be honest people. You know, we need to learn how to tolerate people. I used to always hear that from different presidents. We need to learn how to be tolerant. Well, hey, we tolerated y'all ever since we've been here. I thought it was all about love. People need to stop being hypocritical and saying they're this and saying they're that, what they're really not, because if you're about love, you're going to love your people. You're going to love people on the whole and respect them. But what have we gotten here for the most part besides pats on the back and false illusions of we are utopia or we are a melting pot? And when they say melting pot, I say, yeah, we melted right out of the pot. We melted so far into it that we evaporated out of it.
Well, Al-Tariq, now you could turn the AK-47 upside down and blow the smoke off the barrel, okay? You have definitely come out louder than I have ever heard you before. And honestly, it is true. Honesty, and I'm going to get to you, Terry, in just 1 minute. Honesty is the best policy, right? That's why everything that's been happening has not happened under any honest terms. Denial is not just the biggest weapon for death. It's the biggest weapon for us staying right the hell where we're at on both ends. Now, we have a different way of doing dealing with the same thing that they do. Now, we deny, like they deny, but they deny because they don't want to upset their comfort zone. We deny because we're too afraid that what little we have, which we have conditioned ourselves to believe, is a great master, the great favor from our masters.
That's what I see, yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, we deny it that way. We try to, just like they do, try to point out all the changes that were made. Just like they try to keep pushing up. So I'm not a racist. Look how many black friends I've had. I've donated to black charities. Isn't that what Donald Sterling said in the midst of saying, don't bring them to my club?
That's right.
Elvis Presley said blacks and Puerto Ricans can do nothing but shine his shoes. But he was America's great hunk of the century.
Hmm.
Carvel ice cream owners, which they are now defunct, if any, was under a undercover investigation or sting where the Carvel owner went through applications from interview process and was picking candidates to work for his store based on names that were wholesome and pure American. What's this Shaniqua person? What kind of name is that? Pick this one. Marianne James. See, that's a nice, solid name. That's simple. Then we got our own confused idiots of our own type. Racism is not saying that you're a nigger. Racism is asking if you ever bumped your knee in an interview. We need to stop walking around with the woe is me attitude. You guys need to understand we can get a house now. Sure. Sure we can. Now ask how many hoops you had to jump through versus your white counterpart to get it. Even things that are designed for people who don't have the ideal startup capital is riddled with creditworthiness, is riddled with how much capital you can, is riddled with 30 years of payment before you can actually own your place. Terry, sweetheart, welcome to the show. What is your feeling about this?
Your commentary about the trolling was spot on. I was listening to This Week in Blackness. They have a podcast Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And they were touching upon, you know, how women of color, specifically like black women groups, are under attack. Well, black women tweeters are under attack, especially they were talking about some service called 4chan. I never heard of it until, you know, but apparently it's popular, it's becoming popular. And they put up these hashtags, you know, like one of the hashtags was white women don't get raped or something like that. And it was quote, supposedly, I'm doing the air quote, supposedly started by a black person, but come to find out it was started by a white supremacist dude who wanted to, you know, infiltrate that, you know, the black Twitter, you know,
right,
and get people angry and against the quote-unquote women of color who supposedly started the hashtag, but it was started by, you know, these types of people, you know, it's like, why are you coming into our space, you know, trying to turn, you know, other groups against us? You know, they're putting up fake Twitter accounts and they're putting up these vile hashtags and, you know, and making it seem like it came from, you know, women and men of color.
Absolutely, because that's what idiots and ignorant cowards do. They do everything in groups. First of all, one of the things that you just said, it's sort of, let me compare it to what happens here. Anytime we're speaking about black positivity or self-empowerment, we get them. Anytime we speak about black or black versus white situation, we get them. They don't call when we're speaking about celebrating, the teen violence, even not even celebrating it, but discussing teen domestic violence.
Right.
We don't get them. But guess how they come? They don't come with a number that anybody can readily identify. They come with fake names from on Skype. They come with unknown numbers. Historically, they never even. Oh, and they come in masses. Now, this is a radio show. It doesn't have a threat. Nobody's standing in front of your door with a shotgun looking suspicious. But this is a radio show where everybody is entitled to speak their mind, even them, okay? But they have to come in masses. They come with one friend who's waiting in line to call and pretend he's a caller to get his thing off so that it could be a double, triple, quadruple attack. Back in the days, even their big grandmaster supremacist group, which was the KKK, never even showed their faces. So we have people who have to come to a one-man fight with a mask.
Yeah, they even come into our spaces, and I don't know whether to be sorry for them or scared, like, because I don't spend my time certainly going into their spaces. I got better things to do. What the hell I want to go into your
Thank
space?
You.
You're talking about issues that's pertaining to you. I guess that we're so either scary or important to them that they need to derail try to derail our conversation. And it's like you
important.
Said, it's like you said, I had to tell one of my former coworkers, we're talking about racism, about the direct link of how slavery into Jim Crow affected. I said, well, it may not have affected me directly in the ways that, you know, I said, well, this does affect me because I don't have the historical marker, you know, house, capital, property, or whatever that white people have that my parents and my grandparents can pass down to me so that I can have access to, you know, let's say the good credit or whatever. You know, and I had to break it down. I'm like, okay. You know, I'll give you an example. My great-grandfather was born into slavery. You know, I had to break it down for her and go through from my great-grandfather to my grandmother, you know, how they couldn't get loans. You know, how my grandfather fought in World War II. He couldn't get a loan to move into Long Island because they were living in New York, you know, so they weren't eligible for the GI loan. I said, you know, she wasn't eligible for Social Security for so many years, you know, because when they started Social Security back in the 1930s, FDR had the New Deal, 1930s, you know, black people weren't eligible for that. You know, it's only later that they became eligible for that. And for Medicare, when it first started, they weren't eligible. Very few black people were eligible for that, too. So I had to break it down. I said, and that's the legacy of slavery. So, yeah, it's not directly. You can't find any direct slaves or slave owners, but you can see the legacy and how it breaks down.
You may not have the lashes on your back. I get what you're saying. You don't have the lashes from the slave whips on your back. You're not being, you know, smacked in the face by oncoming horse and buggies. I get it. But we're still dealing with that. And I had quite a few of our people today when we were speaking about reparations. Actually, not today. That was 2 days ago during there where I got so many of our people speaking about, well, reparations were paid. We can go out there and get jobs. Right.
No,
we
reparations weren't paid.
Right. No, they were paid. But to the slave owners, which somebody else in our people decided to ask us so, you know, aptly bring out today and yesterday and the day before, as a matter of fact.
Right. Well, let's just say they weren't paid.
Slave
right. They
owners
weren't paid
because their equipment
right.
was defective. The equipment meaning us. And so they definitely suffered a loss. And
you're right. Lincoln gave the slave owners after the Civil War reparations for their quote-unquote lost property.
Right. Lost property. That's what they call black people.
Mm-hmm.
Chinese people got reparations and are now one of our biggest job stealers because our own country is outsourcing their own economic flourishment to other people.
Right, and that's what I had to explain, you know, to another person. I said, you know, because they, you know, his parents came to this country, so he was the first or second, you know, because he was born over here. And I said, you know, you have to realize that racism isn't, you know, it serves capitalism, you know, because it keeps the black and brown lower middle classes from merging with the white middle class. I'm like, you know, but what happened over the years is that the stuff that they were doing to us, they're starting to do to the white people, you know, and now the white people, you know, is especially since Obama was elected president, you know, they get like, they're getting like super hyped. They want these open carry laws in all of these states. They want to carry their guns to Sonic and Target. You know, they feel that they're losing power because the stuff that they, it's insidious, it leeches. You can't think that what you were going to do to the black and brown people wasn't going to catch up with you. Now it's leeching. But, you know, the lower middle class and working class and middle class white people, they don't have no protection, or they're starting to, you know, their protections that they had are starting to crumble. You know, so it, now it's just the wealthy people.
And actually, sir, that it couldn't be further from the truth. Maybe they can spin that if they like. But no matter how down a white person goes, no matter how messed up they've done in their life, no matter what kind of bad choices they made and continue to make until it caught up with them, no matter how far down they fall, they always have the privilege of white. They always have the protection.
Yeah, they
of
always
white.
Have the. Oh, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying the stuff that they like the. Previous speaker was saying the stuff that they were doing to us, that's like the karma is coming back to them, you know, just starting
right.
out slowly. So, yeah, they always have that the white privilege thing, you know, and I had to explain to somebody last year what white privilege was. Well, I don't have it easy. I'm like, white privilege doesn't mean you have it easy. White privilege means that when you go outside, you don't have to worry about being stopped and frisked. If you ask a person for help, you don't have to determine whether you want to get shot or, you know, some harm
right.
is going to come to you. That's what white privilege is. It doesn't mean that your life is any easier, or it doesn't mean that I want what you have. It just means that those are things you don't ever have to consider.
There's advocacy groups in place, not just for them, but for other ethnicities. There's somebody that's always going to step into the defense of every white celebrity, but be it young or old, that gets into some huge scandal. It's celebrated. It's excused. It's explained. It's
right.
Protected.
They get sympathy tea and crumpets.
Right.
But yeah, Chris Brown did something right.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Brown did something 5 years ago, and he's still, you know, vilified to this day. But the other white
Michael Vick, I think that was almost 8 years ago now, and you are absolutely right. Okay? You are absolutely right. And I do have 1, 2, 3 panelists in waiting. Let me bring them in, okay? And, Terry, you can continue your point when I do, okay? Hold on.
Okay.
Welcome to the show, Carly. You're on the air.
Hey, good evening, Katie. Panelists, this is Professor Carlton Jones.
Hey, Professor, let me just bring in this following panelist, and Terry will finish her point, and then you'll have the mic. Hang on 1 second.
So,
welcome to the show,
Corey.
Hi.
Hi, Erica.
How are you
welcome.
Doing, sweetie?
I'm doing. Oh, fine. You're going to be, Terry's going to finish her point, Professor's after her, and then it's you, and I'm going to bring in our other remaining panelists. Hang on 1 second.
Okay.
Welcome to the show, Corey. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Katie? I'm loving the show, and I'm really enjoying the topic.
Oh, Hakeem, that's your voice I haven't heard on the air in a while. Okay. Go ahead, Terry, dear. Finish up what you're saying, love.
Okay, but the last point I was going to make is about, you know, they did a study about white millennials feel that they are, you know, they are being racially discriminated against because they don't know any, I can't even say it's just white. I'm just noticing, like, everyone born after a certain time seems to think, you know, because we have a black, like 20 and 30 years old, seems to think that because we have a black president, we live in a post-racial, because they don't know how to deal with or identify subtle racism, or as they call it, neo-racism, I think it's a new term, or gray racism. They don't know
right.
how to identify that. They think it has to be, oh, somebody has to call you a nigger, or somebody has to do something really overtly racist, so they don't know how to identify these. I can't call them new forms of racism because they've always been there, but it's just that it's more prevalent now.
You know what I call it? I call it white collar racism, and I'm going to
mm-hmm.
tell you what I mean by that. Back then, they could just openly take a billy club, brand you, you know, drag you across America on a lynch mob rope or whatever the hell it was. They could do that, and it was supported, and it was accompanied, It was everything. But since all the laws, quote unquote, in the Congress, protective rights, quote unquote, came into play, now they can't do that straight up. I mean, it still happens. There's still things that go on. But now, since we can't go at them through the front door, let's take away everything that's going to make them need anyway. Let's take away their housing. Let's take away their rights to food. Let's take away their
jobs.
We can't have smart niggas.
Let's take away criminals.
Let's take away the true leaders of their society, which is our men. Let's take them by, projecting them as subs and them being able to talk about it. Let's effeminize them by making the gay culture something that's not really natural born, but it's a choice now. Let's put them up there and offer them more zero than they've ever seen by telling them that if you go on Maury Povich and talk about how you are a 50 man a night sleeping slut that doesn't know where her baby's daddy is and talk about it on Live America. Because Maury Povich is supposed to be
the effects of white supremacist culture on the black mind. Because, you know, we're conscious, so we can kind of know, but a lot of black people don't know. Or like you said, they're so in fear, you know, they're just trying to survive and keep what they have. So they don't want to deal with it because they're afraid of losing. So that's all I have to say. I mean, I could talk, you know, more about the criminalization of black people, you know, the black people
Absolutely.
As a problem, and, you know, but that's all in works in white supremacy, you know.
One of the things that you did say earlier that happens to be one of my closest sensitive pet peeves is when you spoke about, you know, what white privilege, where a person doesn't have to worry about walking up to a cop and figuring out if they're going to get shot or not. I've always said it from the opposite end. Our boys and girls have to get up when they've fallen down or hit their head somewhere. And if they see a police officer after being victimized, they have to come with their hands out and their palms spread and, like, I come in peace to get help. So just listening to you talk, and I know Erica will be up in a little bit because she's my new spitfire, but I will tell you that that's one of my pet peeves as well. Was something that a white person to sit there and say that racism isn't as bad or is no longer in existence, or for our people in particular to say that, which sickens me to my stomach to no end, because how confused the hell are we?
Yeah.
How scared are we? Michael Vick was forced to be his own spokesperson against animal cruelty. Now you tell me what white offender has to do that 8 years after the fact and after serving time and everything. Are you kidding me, people? He hangs his head. What, the animals deserve some love too. They're members of the family in many cases. Don't do like I did. You tell me why the hell they don't have Riley Cooper up there talking about how racism is against humanity. Why does it have to be a board meeting to figure out if it was Donald Sterling's voice before they fire his ass? My bad. I got a little off. I had a little moment. Erica, our professor, babe, you're up.
Huh?
I said you're up.
Okay. So, you know, we're talking about the system, and I think that, the sister and I, Tariq, were on point with, and as well as you, Katie, when you talk about the circumstances that we deal with. You know, I want to take this back to last night and that situation that we had with the call of Joe. You know, white supremacists and white nationalists are really skilled at trying to deflate and deflect the argument of white supremacy, racism. And what they do is they try to create scenarios and topics where they can exclude all the outside factors. And when we talk about racism and white supremacy, it is a full spectrum type of event. It is not something that's occurring on one extreme or another. It's happening on all extremes when it comes to how it reflects or how it deals with our community. So you can't, you know, necessarily say, well, if you've never been pulled over by a cop, then you weren't a victim of racism and white supremacy, because racism and white supremacy isn't just that you get pulled over by a cop. You can't necessarily say that if you were able to go to high school and go to college and get a decent job, that you weren't affected by racism and white supremacy. Racism and white supremacy is not just based on that. There are a certain few of us that are going to slip through the cracks, and it's by design of racism and white supremacy to give them plausible deniability that racism and white supremacy exists. So, you know, to deal with the situations and to deal with fake and false scenarios and situations, you know, I just was not going to deal with that last night, and I was not going to allow him to put us in a position where he gets to celebrate his, you know, superiority complex by dancing us with a fictitious and misleading scenario. But back to the question at hand is how do we deal with racism in our society? I think we need to stop calling it racism, and I think we need to start calling it racism white supremacy, because when we call it racism, we give members of the dominant society an opportunity to opt out and cop out on all of the different terms that we use, and they often try to use those terms to deflect our and deflate our arguments when it comes to us getting real justice. As Dr. Neely Fuller said, and he is the man who coined the phrase racism, white supremacy, and he broke the code of the system, if you don't understand racism, white supremacy, then everything else you know will just serve to confuse you. So we really have to take a step back when it comes to talking about politics, when it comes to talking about education, when it comes to talking about the workforce, because racism, white supremacy is so enormous that it impacts every single thing we do. It impacts the fact that our communities are set up to be vandalized by outside sources and foreign people, so that, you know, the community is not put in place for us to build and make financial equity within our own neighborhoods. It's designed so that these places come in, these big conglomerations, and they get tax exemptions. So what does that do? So now the school districts are not getting that tax money that comes from the property tax, okay? So now all of a sudden our schools are in poor neighborhoods, and we're not receiving any iota of the business. So say if a Walmart opens up in your neighborhood, you're not getting any of that tax dollars devoted. None of those tax dollars are going to be devoted to your school district. So that's an economic drain, and that affects you on more than one level. Academically, we know the majority of teachers that come teach in those schools are Jewish women. Now, if we put people in place, how are we to expect for them to put our children in a position to compete with their children? So this is what's racism. And when we deal with those things, those all factor in to racism and white supremacy. So it's in a large scale, and then we don't deal with it because we've been taught through since the 1700s when meritorious manumission became a law and policy, to where we make it beneficial to turn on each other and to make white people rich, you know, make the plantation owners rich by using our genius to fill their pockets, to line their pockets, to build their wealth, and so forth. So that person, now that whole mentality comes forward to today. So when we talk about the conditions of our community, it is shameful for us to shame our fathers for their shameful past. And when I say that, I say it sarcastically, because basically what it is members of the black community have become accustomed to partaking up, you know, Stockholm syndrome, if we must. To where we're protecting our the oppressors, the ones that have raped us and the ones who have castrated us in the past, and we're protecting them. So, you know, we have that, and we also have the cognitive dissonance that's involved with it, because now we're uncomfortable talking about race, because we've been made to believe that if you talk about race and you're black, you consider yourself a victim, and then we need to look at you as being weak because you consider yourself a victim. No, somebody raped us. And you know what? I didn't choose to be raped. You did that. You know, you raped my forefathers. You raped our ancestors. So, You know, they didn't choose for it to happen. You have more weapons, and you impose your will upon them. Now you need to pay the piper, and that's what we're talking about today.
Right, and what we heard yesterday was, black people have opportunities. You're just not out there getting it. Well, what opportunity do we have to not be slaves? What opportunity do we have to not be broken apart, not be raped, not be murdered, our feet chopped off? What opportunity do we have when the people we should be able to go to get justice or protection were part of the masses? Who did it? And as you said, Stockholm Syndrome, we spoke on that before. Well, now, I did say that tonight is part of us discussing the similar way, the similar methods of handling between both races as well as how we do it differently. And there's actually a couple of things that we do, that we're doing the same thing in different manners. So it's way off the cuff. We have been conditioned to not be able to blend with ourselves, and at the same time, that was exactly the thing that kept us going. But modern-day society, as Terry alluded to, it's no longer the whips in your face or the shooting you in public, or as I love talking about, to bring up an example, my father and grandfather as a situation, where my father at 4 years old went to go drink, take a drink of water, not able to understand what whites-only fountain meant. And before my grandfather can steer him away, a white man backhanded him in front of my grandfather and put a gun in his face and told him, do something, nigger.
Well, Katie, those things are still happening. And it's still happening.
It is.
I mean, not only is it happening, it's being prime time, it's being broadcasted and promoted and rewarded. You know, we can say we're not being shot down in the street, but George Zimmerman is now being seen as a hero in the white community. Michael Dunn is seen as a hero community. And they both got off from committing murders. They both committed murders, and they both got to walk because they killed black boys. And those things are happening. There are lynchings happening all around the country, and they're considered, but they're written as suicides. You know, there are cases, and, you know, there's a brother that I wish there were. I'm going to try to get him to call in one day. It's a good brother, my brother Jamal out in California, who's an avid researcher, and he was able to uncover about, like, 25 different cases, unsolved hangings and so forth that are going on all over the country that are being listed as suicides or mysterious deaths. You know, so these things are still happening. But what's happening is because we deal with the dominant media and because we deal with situations where they want to suppress our news, the news that shames the white community, because we're dealing with those situations, we don't get those stories. And it's like I always say, because we keep leaving the power in their hand to tell our stories, we keep settling for the stories that they tell us. Instead of us using the social media to promote, like, really, honestly, you should have over 100,000 listeners tonight. That's how we should be promoting social media. You feel me? But we're not, because the white community has not given us permission. The dominant white society has not given us permission to go out on our own and to leave the reservation or to leave the plantation. And until we get to that point in our minds where we're liberated enough to say, to hell with them and how they think and how they feel, we're going to tell the news how we do it, I mean, how it happens, and we give a damn about the consequences. The revolution will not be televised until we get to that point, and we're going to continue to suffer these situations and consequences.
Funny, everything you just mentioned is going to be in part two of the segment, but you're absolutely right. Social media has turned into us yet again internalizing the war on ourselves, because everybody is too afraid to say, yes, that's the reason why. And then when they do, you know, one of the things that I have brought up in the pre-broadcast discussion today was white people deny it by pointing out all of the things that we have now, why it's not so bad. And I'm not one of them. I didn't do this. I wouldn't dare walk out there. Understand the ignorance and the way that things are run, what they value, what they cherish, what their whole set of morals are, is money-based. So you really can't connect with humanity on a broad level, on a all just everybody is a human level, when that is what drives you. Because the Indians did nothing but love their land and actually even help them, if you want to go by the history we've been taught about how Thanksgiving came to be. And what happened with that? I guess after all that they learned, it wasn't enough for them because they couldn't do it. So they started saying, wait a minute, these idiots are out there worshiping a tree when you could cut that down and make about 5,000 reams of paper with the one branch. They're not civilized. They're savages. They're savages. Your children sit in front of a public forum, scratching their asses, picking their nose, getting drunk beyond their capacity to be drunk, calling people niggers, calling people spicks, laughing and joking in a cop's face, throwing up all over public transportation, loud and obnoxious. Your daughters are walking around making sure that every sex tape they could possibly make is being done. But where are the savages?
You know, there's one thing you say, Katie, that I want to try to get us to look at it at a different angle. Because a lot of us think that this is an economic situation for the dominant society. And I think it goes a little beyond that. The dominant society is not necessarily enamored with money. They're enamored with wealth and control. So the reason why this country was created with free slave labor was to create an empire for white supremacy. A lot of people don't understand that. But the reason why everybody came to America was because they wanted to create this system of white supremacy based on free slave labor. And that's what they did. So to create the institution and to create the power structure, see, this is a power structure. And, you know, I think a lot of us get confused about the whole monetary situation. And like I said before, a lot of us have this thing where we try to have all the answers. None of us have all the answers. If we had all the answers, we'd be unlocking these codes that they have on us, where many of us are walking around like the Walking Dead, and we'd be able to uncover the secret recipe to how they created this whole society for the zombies. But you know, the focus of white supremacy has always been about dominance and control. You see, they can control the monetary markets and all these so-called rich athletes that we have, their money could be reduced to rubble over the span of a week, especially if they take and manipulate the stock markets. You know, so the game is power. And that's why, you know, I try to preach to people to try to acquire as much land as possible, because land is the one thing that once you acquire it, you know, you can manipulate the money, you manipulate the dollar amount, but the land is still your property, and you can still maintain that. And with the land, we can start developing our own systems of resources and things of that nature.
Absolutely. Erica, sweetheart, thanks for waiting. It's on you.
Hi. I want to touch on what Altrique was saying about the religion aspect of slavery. We have to realize that that's what keeps us enslaved. They know that they taught us and brainwashed us. And don't get me wrong, I'm a Christian. But my beliefs in Christianity isn't what was taught to me from my oppressors. At the end of the day, they know what religion they brainwashed us with. They know what rules and regulations that came along with those religion beliefs. So they know we're not going to jump, because guess what? Jesus teaches us not to jump. He tells us to do what? Turn the other cheek. So when we discuss the things such as the Stockholm Syndrome we have, that plays a big part of what gives us that Stockholm Syndrome, is that religion may brainwash us with. We're waiting on the other side of the mountain. There's a streets of gold and this promised land that Jesus promised us. We could bear all the hell we want while we on earth now, because we all know when we get to the other side, it's streets of gold. Have we ever said and thought about what if there is an other side? What if there isn't a streets of gold? And what makes us such bad people that we can't enjoy life and pleasure on this earth now and in heaven if we get there?
Right.
So there's nothing wrong with us demanding our justice now. And that's one of the biggest issues I have with the black community. We tend to turn the other cheek to Trayvon Martin. We tend to turn the other cheek when our little kids are getting hung and injustice, and they're getting charged for crimes they didn't commit, because, hey, once we leave here, it's going to be better on the other side. God got a mansion waiting for us in heaven. Those are things that play into that Stockholm syndrome. No, we take what's ours now. We take what's due to us now.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day,
maybe at the end of the day,
they know something about that religion they brainwashed us with that we don't know about. Look how many years we believed that Jesus was a white man until we were able to study and learn geography for ourselves.
Absolutely.
And they never to this day admitted that Jesus wasn't a white man. That's when once we learned geography, our common sense came into play. It's like, hey, wait a minute. There's no way Jesus could have looked like this European man.
They had spent so many years building cover fronts, building the force field so that everybody has to get through yet another layer to get to the bottom of what's really their problem. Their problem is they fear. They fear being eliminated. They fear being out of control. They fear that if the people that they've been watching and spying on and scheming on and eavesdropping on and studying and figuring out how they can get in or penetrate that great strength of force that we had with each other, our loyalty, our love for our families, our belief in marriage, our spirituality, because no matter how many body parts they took, no matter how many physical things they removed from us, they couldn't take our belief and our faith and our spirituality. They couldn't do that, and they still can't. They can put all the microchips in our head that they want, but they still can't take what's inside. But they make sure that they build as many big empires that they can, as many deep pockets as they can, as many institutions of finance that they can. They make sure that they write the rules, because each and every time we get closer to getting a piece of one of those things, that's one less thing that they can hide behind. Why would you sit there? Matter of fact, I believe we just had a troll listening in silently trying to figure out what we niggas are up to now. And I think when they get enough, they go back with their little cliff notes and have their little boardroom think tank scenarios and say, wait a minute, that one's getting a little too loud. She's a little too educated. Time to bring that one down.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want your community. We don't want it. We want ours. You could stay on the other side of your big white suburban fence. Leave us the hell alone.
And that's all we want. At the end of the day, that's all we want. We're not trying to take over. We're not trying to conquer. All we want is what's due to us, and that's equality. All we want
the
is
the right
equality.
To walk the streets without worrying about somebody coming in and profiling through fear that, wait a minute, he's way too tall, way too muscular, wait a minute, whoa, what's in his pants? He's a beast. That's the problem. We got to get rid of him.
Well, what you got to see is, we're not just dealing with a people that want to mess with us or pick with us. We're dealing with a people who recognize that they're genetically inferior, and a lot of people don't want to acknowledge that, but. When you think about it for a second, why do bullies always kick with people in school? Because the bully fears that once they lose that quality, once they lose that control factor, once they lose that fear that they've been planted in everybody, that they will have no legs to stand on. They don't have any other talents. And that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with the people that understand that, see, this is a competitive being a human being is a competitive experience. And to some extent, it is sort of Darwinistic when you talk about survival of the fittest. Unfortunately for us, we read into the Darwinist theory wrong when people start assuming that the darker you are, the less intelligent you are. When you start to do the analysis, is the darker you are, the more in tune you are with nature, the more you get with in tune you are with your melanin, and the more in tune you are with that superconductor of sunlight, which is the life giver of this universe, universe that we live in. And when you are in tune with all those things, it brings out a creative gene that is unmatched by any other species on this planet. And when you see all those things happen, I mean, just like we said a few nights ago, you beat us down, you stole our languages, you stole our religions, you stole, you tried to steal our spirituality, you couldn't. And after slavery was abolished, 10 years later, we're already becoming economic powerhouses, building town after town in this country. And people saw that. They said, damn, look at what we did to them. We did to them, put them in conditions worse than any time in the Dark Ages. The Europeans spent in the Dark Ages. And yet and still, you see, we still were able to flourish in their system. We took their system of capitalism, and was able to flourish. And they erased those pages from the book on how they destroyed that capital from those particular towns, to those particular sections of cities, and so forth. Nobody ever goes back and does the history on how Central Park came to be and why they built Central Park. Nobody goes back and does the history on how these decrepit cities around the country of what they used to be, these black communities and so forth. You have blacks in all these different places, and now all of a sudden, you know, we have nothing but a history of crime, a history of being poor. No. That's not the case. And everybody recognizes that. And because whites don't like to talk about their shame, because their shame comes with a price tag, we continue to fall out of favor with the white community, because they understand that when there's ever time to pay the piper, they're going to lose big time. They're going to lose out.
But how can you fall out of favor with people who never favored you in the first place and never will? And that's where we have to open up our damn minds and start pretending that we remember what it was like to have one.
They will fall out of favor. That's what I mean.
Yeah. You mean fall out of favor, meaning that we can't get that rap record deal. Uh-oh, they might take away the Nikes. Oh, man, I need that $3,000 belt.
No. What I mean, Katie, is the white community, the members of the dominant society that are withholding all the information, that's withholding all the secrets, that they will fall out of favor in terms of the faith. They will lose their privilege.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if we're ever, the only thing that stands between them and total obscurity is their privilege. You know, think about the natural talents, the natural contributions. You can't go anywhere in this world where whites were, you know, where it was plentiful. They had to go and conquer lands all over the world where things were plentiful. They even tried to go into the Orient. They had to turn the whole continent of Asia into druggies in order to invade Asia. They went to Africa.
Yep.
They went into, you know, they had to go and do all sorts of things where they turned chiefdoms against one another. They infiltrated with the Arabs and created Swahili so that they could have the common language to bring the neighbors down. They used guns and all sorts of trades to create the slave trade. You know, all these different things they did. It was all sorts of trickery, all sorts of treachery. But it was never anything naturally created. It was always done in some type of devilish scheme, some type of plan to take what somebody else had. I mean, damn it, we call America the greatest country in the world. But 500 years ago, this country was occupied by Moors, and it was occupied by Native Americans.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? Here's the funny thing. Every one of those ethnicities that America screwed up somehow got reparations that allowed them to come out of it, that allowed them to build again, that allowed them to go and extend beyond themselves. And guess what? Their suffering now ended. Blacks' suffering continues day to day to day.
We have the biggest
crisis. And reparations were paid to the people who caused it, and we're sitting up there going, reparations were paid. And we could get jobs and our kids could go to school. I remember when my grandfather told me that if we were caught with a pencil or anything that could write, we got shot. And, hello?
I don't give those arguments the time of day. I really don't. Because,
you got people saying,
you know,
that the word nigger isn't a racist word, but saying if you ever bumped your knee at a damn job interview that you probably won't get the position that you're qualified for anyway. Is so I ask these people, if somebody walked up to your particular daughter or son and said this word, would you say it wasn't racism then? I do need to give Hakeem his shot because we have to go to a break before we come back with part two. All right, Hakeem, thanks for being patient and welcome back.
Hey, I'm enjoying everybody's views. It's working for me. I got no comments.
You have no comment?
No, I'm enjoying everything.
Oh, okay. So you just want to sit around and just be live and listening. I got you, dude. Well, I want to go to break because I want to talk about, when we come back, the specific ways that we as Black Americans deal with racism. And I'm talking about the methods of deflection and the methods of denial as to how the white people do it. I want to speak about that, and then we're going to speak solutions because, you know, I never leave the show before we start speaking about how we can change things. So I'm going out with Paul Robinson, known as PR, with So Tired, because, believe me, it couldn't be a more appropriate song for this particular topic. So I'll be back in about 7 minutes. You guys hang out with me, okay?
I ain't an activist, I'm just a man that's from America, but they still call him my African. Slash American, but he should just be American. They say he white, but they don't call him European. They say I'm black when I fill out my application. My skin brown, I think somebody was mistaken. Why you need to know what my race is, you racist? What my skin color got to do with job placement? Shouldn't this be about skill? This shouldn't be how you feel about me, how I dress, if I pay my light bill. I can understand you wanting to know if I steal, but if I say no and I will, you shouldn't be in my grill, looking in my face, in my eyes, trying to see if I lie. Would you have taken my word for it if I would have wore a suit and tie? What if my skin was a little lighter, a little brighter, a little whiter, and I had a felony? Would you catch the case of Alzheimer's for me being who I am and you being who you are? We both know that my complexion does play a major part, and that's not fair. Let's switch chairs, let me see if you like what you do. Look down on you like you only stood 2'2". Don't even read your application. You white, I call you. See, that's what y'all do, make my people feel not equal. This happened to the older generation, we the sequel. I know you think we slow, look at my ancestors, I don't think so. We did so much for this country, but you still want more. First open heart surgery, stoplight, the clock to see if I'm late or not. The mail you sending, who made the box? The janitor that you look down on, who you think made the mop? George Washington, Carver's, Benjamin Banneker, all of us. No, it wouldn't be no Steve Jobs if it wasn't for Mark Dean, Charles Drew, Madam C.J. Walker, just to name a few. But y'all think that we dumb, cage us in like we some type of animals, barely feed us, cannibals. We feed off each other, we eat off each other. So what y'all do, devise a plan to bring down the brother man? No 40 acres, just some crack and some heroin. No mules, some rules are meant to be broken. Like selling the drugs you put in the neighborhood, y'all must be joking. Of course they smoking, of course they shooting up, of course they think they worthless. To y'all that's picture perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh? Black man, wake up, this is a state of emergency, my brother tried to murder me. Black man, what's up, another one just got hit up, another one just got picked up.
I'm so tired.
understand. Six during the weekend, 11 on the weekend. Weekend that like it ain't a problem. Pretend like the beef ain't killing our younger generation. We need to be vegans, but where do we begin? I think the home, cuz if the child feeds mama and daddy on drugs, mama and daddy in the kitchen sipping bottles, flipping it up, loving and tripping, dugging and tripping. You shouldn't be blaming us, blaming me, I'm blaming you. You see what the blame it does? Nothing, we getting nowhere. Treadmill, dangerous. Uncle Tom made a statement, he ain't the same as us. He said he moving out the hood, cause he ashamed of us, but we ashamed of you. Tell me what kind of lame is you? In the middle of the war, you just desert your crew. If you feel some type of way, then this goes out to you. Them kind of needs is cold as hell with Obama features. The Bill Cosby, Oprah Winfrey, pointing fingers. The generation before us is what did this.
You're listening to On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. Tonight we are speaking about racism. Peekaboo, I see you and I see you not. Speaking about all the ways that the big elephant in the room is being avoided in speech, avoided in actions. We speak about everything around it. Nobody wants to address it, and that is the root of the problem on all angles. So we are not moving forward, we are not reconnecting, we're not harmonizing. None of these things are going to happen until everybody can get on board and say there's an elephant in the room and we need to get rid of it. So, bringing in our Spitfire panelists back this evening. Terry, are you with me? Okay. Al-Tariq, are you back?
Yes, I am.
My little Spitfire, Erica, are you back?
I'm here, Katie.
Okay. Hi, Terry. Are you back?
My phone locked, and I was trying to unlock it.
Don't feel bad. Mine keeps freezing, too. I can't even get the mute button off sometimes. Hang on a minute. Professor, are you back?
Sure is.
And Hakeem?
Yes.
All right. Just want to be sure that everybody stayed with the connection. All right. I want to start discussing the similarities and the differences in the way both sides of the color fence handles the same situations in racism. All right. First of all, I agree that we can both sides try to avoid it on some level or another. I believe that they have different reasons for doing it. I believe that I wrote it out today. I believe that white people, for fear of, let's say, losing status or shaking up their own particular comfort zone with their own people, or they're too afraid to take a stand, or they blatantly practice it themselves, so it's not even an issue that they feel should be avoided. But there's so many of them, they're like, oh, I know that's wrong, but, oh, let's just not say anything. Well, inaction is as bad, as, in my opinion, as being guilty of it. Black people, we tend to either join the mentality for the reasons of, you know, the mass that gave them house nigger status for a little bit. They gave them a little a crumb. They gave them that piece of fat off their prime rib scraps. So they don't want to upset that little boat right there. We also are too afraid, period, to just storm the mountain. So we don't want anybody coming after us, or we don't want things to happen, or we don't want to lose whatever it is we have. Other people pretty much know it, see it, just won't try anything on our end. That's what I believe we're alike about. Now, there's something I brought up where it's the same thing, or the belief is the same, or the actual action is the same, and it's done differently, but it all boils down to the same bottom line principle. And I believe that when white people think that because they're not shooting you, or they would, you know, they would welcome you if they saw you, or they wouldn't walk the other way, they wouldn't embrace you in the pool parties, but they don't could think you should be shot down. So they feel that by not being that way, but yet not saying anything, that they're actually doing something. Us, on the other hand, we believe that by going on out there, acknowledging it, saying that we know what it is, and then screaming about it but doing nothing, means we've done something. Sure. So we do the same thing for different reasons, but coming back to the same thing. And everything I've just mentioned at this point still is not a damn thing at all.
And we'll march and we'll march and protest, but when it comes to making sacrifices on what you're buying, because that's how you affect change, you know, in this America right here, is through the pocketbook. So,
absolutely.
You know, we're willing to make that economic, you know, withhold our dollars from stuff. People don't want to do that. People, I work hard for my money. I should be able to spend it for as I like nonsense. No. You know, during the boycotts in the 1950s, the bus boycotts in the 1950s, those people walked for miles and miles.
Because that was their right to choose. That was the power that they couldn't take away. What were they going to do? Shoot you because you wouldn't ride the bus? I mean, this is, and believe me, that happened. But this is what I say to our people today. Yes, we are messed up from conditioning brought down by our history, from what society kept on putting in our heads by offering us, look, I got this steak right here. I know you're hungry. If you want it, all you got to do is jump through a hoop and be a dog for a day. Here's a steak. Probably the best prime cut you've ever seen in your life. All right, we'll get it back.
Katie, one of the things that you know, we have to also realize is these different laws that we talk about from the way back when, okay, these laws are never remanded from the books. So they would just find different ways to reinstitute them. And different ways to
continue.
Yeah.
Let me just finish up what I was going to say, because
okay.
it's not that I believe at all that we're not messed up because of outside forces, things we couldn't control. What I'm saying is let's just call it like this. We really don't have much to work with in the state that we're in, either by choices we made to allow ourselves to become here, knowing what we know about what we've come from, dropping the ball after the village we were raised in, we failed to become one ourselves. Okay, what I'm saying is the little things that we consider insignificant because of the fact that we have this face value or mountaintop measurement of success and value.
Mm-hmm.
We don't realize that it's something that they can't take away no matter how much fear tactics, no matter how many explosions, no matter how many guns they put to your head. They cannot take away your power to choose what belongs to you, the way you think. They don't have the power to say where you can spend your money. They can entice the hell out of you, Mm-hmm. They can entice the hell out of you. They could make the most $3,000 phone be affordable to even the welfare community, but they still can't force you to go and buy it.
No, you're absolutely right.
That's what I mean. That's the part that we have to deal with. You and I and the panel, and there is a panelist coming. I see you there. I'm going to bring you in just a sec. We have spoken about this often, and one of the things that we have got to get together, we have repeated it a million times, and I'm not going to stop. We have got to get the hell out of this cash and carry mentality. We have got to get out of being seduced by what shines, by what's big and flashy, by what is a name brand. The name brands that we trust so much were created by them on the back of our labor.
Mm-hmm.
So FUBU might not be the greatest grandstanding, straight-up sneaker with the big type of whatever, but it's a black-owned damn business that you have the power to go and say, listen, I'm your consumer, and I'm not happy with your product because of X, Y, and Z. If you can fix that, you got my support.
Mm-hmm.
And to those black groups that are out there that are actually flourishing and love to sit on top of the mountain telling everybody else how ignorant they are for not being able to achieve the same goddamn status, forgive me, Lord, I didn't mean the God part. The idea was for you to get there so that you can help the rest of your community do the same in their own world, and all of us could be a bunch of sub-factions that got together as one big blanket. That is the problem. Everybody in our community is actually getting there and looking to our community to make them rich and still keep us down where we're at while telling us how stupid we are. We can't be the people to go back and profit off ourselves in some undercover way. That's what they do. They sit in parks and watch the way you interact with your children, because based on the way you act with your children is how they know how the hell to come in and seduce you with bullshit. Enough. You people are grown. We're all grown. We're not stupid. I don't care how afraid we are. We're not stupid. We see it. We know it. And if we know it enough to spend 48 hours on Facebook arguing about articles that turn into self-shooting articles and discussions, get your butts off the mouth clicks and get out to the Congress halls and do something. Tell these people that you're not going to support watching a reality show about a bunch of girls swapping husbands. We're not going to be sitting up there taking Justin Bieber, trying to act like he's black with his sagging pants and his Usher backup, calling us niggas and being excused for it because he was only 14 and 15 at the time, yet it came out at 16 and he's still doing the crap. No, Miley Cyrus is not an icon that you need to follow, a good role model. Britney Spears was drugged out and crazy in the head and a child endangerer. Why the hell is Jada Pinkett Smith and Will Smith so quick to be on the front page for child investigation? Not saying that what she did was any less nice either, but I'm just saying. I'm sick and tired of hearing how people say, look, we have to sit up there and understand that we have to take what they're giving us. We wouldn't have got this back in the day. No problem. We are a black strong group, but if you convert to us, then we'll help you. Get out of my face with that. That's how
Katie, you know that's what that's like? That's like a woman being in a relationship with a man that's beating the crap out of her. He's an alcoholic. Then you go into a relationship where you got a man that's on drugs and he's verbally abusing you. And what your family's saying, well, at least he's not physically abusing you. Either way it go, abuse is abuse. Just because I'm not being physically abused don't mean I'm going to tolerate the mental abuse.
Absolutely.
I don't deserve it once.
Mm-hmm.
That's the mentality we have. Well, the black person today say, well, we got it much better than what our ancestors had. Just because it's better than what they had doesn't mean it's still good enough for me. And it doesn't mean I'm going to settle for anything less than what I deserve.
Or that's the choice. That's the power of choosing. That's how you know thyself. That's how you know yourself. That's how you know what the hell you can bargain with. That's what you know what value is. We don't sit around going into Central Park wondering what kind of interaction you have with your abusively made-up petty pedigree dogs. We don't walk around trying to figure out what exactly it is that entices you to come away with your children. What can we go into your communities and sucker you into? We don't smile in your face while we're figuring out how the hell we're going to slit your throat when we're giving you a drink for free. We don't need to. We need you to leave us the hell alone, just stop stealing our resources, and allow us to move on from our pain and infractions. We don't want to take over the world, and we definitely don't want your world. And we clearly would appreciate it if you would stop trying to infiltrate ours. And secretly wanting ours instead of just saying we're the beautiful people you clearly believe we are. Bringing in our next panelist who's been waiting in nice and neat. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
How you doing, everybody? This is Patrick.
Hey, welcome to the show, brother.
Patrick.
How you doing? It's the cherry. Go ahead.
Man, I wanted to get in earlier, but I was in the middle of talking to a potential House of Rep guy down in Florida, and the conversation flows so smoothly into what you guys are talking about that I was like, hold on, I got to call you back because I got to get on this show right quick, and I got to talk about this with those guys. So can I call you tomorrow? So, but what we were talking about was, there was a rash of shootings in my hometown, Tallahassee, Florida. Cops maybe shot maybe 5 or 6 boys in the last 2 weeks. And they had a town hall meeting about it. And in the town hall meeting, the black people were attacking the city officials who were trying to pretty much say, you know, well, we have a larger gun problem, but the problem is on you guys. Most of the shootings are happening between members of your community, not necessarily between the cops and you guys, or the cops and the community. So the bigger problem here isn't with the cops, it's with the community. And everybody's yelling and screaming. And I'm being told afterwards that there were people, there was an old man whispering, wanting to stand up and say, well, why don't nobody talk about racism? And he was hushed down by the black people around him. Mm. Now, there was another person that stood up and mentioned racism. And what both a partner of mine in this organization we're running back home and the potential congressman said was that every time race was brought up, a pastor would come on the stage, do his little song and dance show, get everybody riled up, and then they would move on to the next topic, and race was never touched, period. It was brought up. It was never touched. The one man that persisted in bringing up was hushed down by other black people. Now, this is amazing to me. Like, this is just, you know, and I wasn't there. They're giving me the, you know, he was, my partner was giving me the 411 after it happened. And I had called this congressman and told him, you know, can we talk about this? Because he was there. And it sparked this whole conversation about race. I guess he learned a bunch of new things. He didn't know that black people had a genuine fear for the lives of the cops. And he didn't know a couple of the other things that were revealed to him after the conversation or after the meeting. But it was just so fascinating to hear and to think about how that whole thing went down. You have a meeting where the cops are shooting black boys on a regular, like shooting them up so much that it's not even reported on the news no more.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
Shooting them up so much that they need to have an emergency town hall meeting. They scheduled they decided they were going to have the meeting yesterday, and they had it today. That's how bad boys were getting shot up.
Oh, my God.
And nobody touches race. How
you
do
know,
we do this?
Well,
I told you, Katie.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know what?
What's happening?
Do you guys remember the show that we were speaking about? And I spoke about the little boy who was coming out of the daycare. He's about 5 or 6 years old coming out of the daycare. His aunt had just picked him up, and they were walking, and just in that two-inch split between him and the aunt who walked a little bit ahead of him, this little boy got clocked in the face with a full closed clenched fist by a white man, and his iPad was stolen. Boy was knocked unconscious. Okay? Now, Good Samaritan saw the situation, dropped what he was doing, ran after the guy, because apparently the police took too damn long to get there, held him until the police got there. They discovered that this white man had been in jail and released 62 times, and this little boy was number 63. How in the hell do you miss convicting of a violent offender 62 damn times?
That's three strikes, what? 21 times.
Wow. Now, what pissed me off was that when the news reporters told of this story, pulled the sympathy card and the amazing dynamics of the fact that it was a child, that nobody would believe a child would get attacked, right? When they used that hook, what they said was the rainbow or the silver lining in this absolute disgusting human garbage nonsense was that there is a silver lining in this. The little boy, let me tell you the news first. Then let me tell you how weird it is. The little boy was able to get a brand new iPad from Apple, and his sister reports that he is happy to have the iPad. Really, woman? The boy's jaw is wired up. He can't see out the side of his eye. His jaw has to be stitched up, surgery to reset his freaking bone structure. But the silver lining in all of this was that he gets a new iPad. You ignorant woman.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the pacifier.
That's how damn ignorant they think we are. Got an iPad for you, got an iPad, got this iPad. Look on the ear. Listen, you can get it. It's $3,000 in the store. I'm going to give it to you for $100. Come on to the side. Yeah, I'm sold for $100. There goes your soul, your dignity, and everything about you that's black. That's because they know black people are for sale. I told you that in this country, they know that we're for sale. We're for sale for the highest bidder. The mere fact that the NBA playoffs continue to go on, and they went out there and played their hearts out for Donald Sterling, saying that our character and our integrity is for sale.
But see, the new cover for all of that is to take this thing to a deeper level. We're not even for sale for dollars and trinkets. We're for sale for things that are even smaller and intangible. We're for sale for the belief and the possibility of a peace of mind and acceptance.
Wow.
That's what we're faced with in this. I mean, when I think about this conversation I just had, where you have black boys being gunned down in the streets by the cops, and nobody mentions race, nobody is allowed to mention race. Are you serious right now? When you go into a meeting where there are 100 people in the room, all of the people in the room that have been getting shot up are black, all of the people in the room that are city officials are white, and nobody thinks that it is an okay suggestion that maybe we ought to bring up race relations, maybe. You don't even have to be a conspiracy theorist or a nut job to see that there is a small possibility that race is at work here. Now let's just examine that. And the fact that, I mean, that speaks to the weakened psychological state that we find ourselves in, where we just want to go along and hope that if we ignore it, it'll go away. And hope that if we don't pay attention to it, we really want to believe in our heart of hearts
that if we just give them the benefit of the doubt and keep working 5 and 6 times as hard for the next 3 to 5 million years, we'll be equal someday. And that's a price we're willing to pay so that we don't have to face the reality of the situation that we're faced with today. Like Joe said, they don't like you. I'm sorry.
If that's not a hint and a half for your ass, if that is not a hint and a half, like, you know what, when I drive and we all stopped at a stoplight and I'm like the second car behind the person that's actually at the light, and the light turns green and they don't go, I always honk my horn and ask them, are you waiting for a different shade of green before you go? You guys catching on to what the hell I'm saying? What do you need for us to hear that they think you're nothing? Listen, let me give you this really, really despicable story. When I was doing the 5-minute news clip for our other sister station, okay, I came across this story. Now, this isn't of an African-American child, but it is a third world country Latino child, okay? This little boy is playing in his yard, okay? It's a yard that apparently is, there's a community fence or whatever, and there's one little partition that separates one person's property from the other, but pretty much it's the same land and everything. Okay, little boy is playing with his ball in his own damn yard. He is going around. Apparently the ball rolled to the edge of, well, to the partition that separates the two yards. The neighbor next door to this parent's house had a pit bull. Apparently wasn't tied up in the yard. I guess they let this little monster run around. All right, they named the dog Mickey. Now, Mickey didn't like the fact that this little boy decided to reach for his own ball on his own side of the fence. So he reaches through the little opening in the slats of the gate and grabs hold of this child's whole head, yanks this boy by his head around to the point where his flesh was ripped off of his eye socket, and his eye socket was dangling. His mouth was split in half. And do you know what these sons of bees said? Arizona law, I believe this was in Arizona, is if somebody's pet is shown to be or proven to be a hostile animal against humans, they are to be put down. Do you know that these people went out there and petitioned for the dog's life to be spared because the dog was a victim too? All right, now let's take a look at this. Let's take a look at this. This 4-year-old baby has flesh that has been detached from its bone and from the other half of its skin. His eye socket is dangling with an eyeball like something you see in the Tales of the Crypt movies. This boy has to get surgery for the rest of his damn natural life before he can even get back to basic decency in his face. Okay, that's his victimization, let alone the trauma that this kid was instilled in this kid. So now let's go look and see how the dog was victimized, shall we? This kid's flesh is ripped and disgusted and has to be sewn up for endless grueling cosmetic surgeries. Meanwhile, Mickey the dog has to spend a couple of hours getting the child's flesh out of his bicuspid. Yeah, I can see the equality and the victimization there.
It's sick.
Katie,
you know, go ahead, Patrick.
I'm sorry. I'm a little amped up after this phone call.
No, but go ahead, man, because you're on fire. Go ahead.
because we got to break this thing down, like, and the Malcolm X quote, I don't know if anybody has quoted Malcolm X yet, but this is a great discussion to quote Malcolm X in. But the quote of, if you stick a knife in my back, how many of us have heard that quote? I think all of us have. Yeah. You stick a knife in my back and pull it out a little bit, that's not progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. Progress is when you pull it out and you bandage up the wounds and you help mend my body. And when we look at what we're going through today, what they've done is they stuck a knife in our back, slavery. They pulled it out a little bit. Okay, y'all are free. And then they came around the front, walked around the front to our faces and started asking us how was our day. Never mind the fact that the knife is still there and blood is trickling. They're asking us how was our day. When it takes a black, when somebody has a black name, and they have to wait 5 additional weeks to get in a call back just because they have a black sounding name, and nobody says anything. That's a hey, how was your day? When black businesses are 32% of the minority business population, not counting white women, but they're 14% of the minority business income, that's a hi, how was your day? When the Small Business Loan Association only gives out 2.7% of its loans to black businesses and nobody says anything, that's a hi, how was your day? Whenever a black child, because a black child is more likely to be punished for doing the same crimes in the classroom, guess what? And nobody says anything, that's a hey, how are you doing? How's the weather? Every time we think about all of these injustices and all of these slights and the dominant society doesn't say anything about it, that is a hey, how you doing? I know we got a knife in your back. The problem is you're too stupid to realize that we didn't pull it all the way out. But that's fine. If you're not going to call us on it, I'm damn sure not going to call myself on it. Why would I put myself in trouble? That's foolish.
I have to interrupt you only because we have 8 minutes left, and I agree with you, and I was just about to ask you, did you go to the same artillery shop that Al-Tariq did, because I haven't heard you get so hot under the collar. What is going on with you, my power dude? First it was Carl and the troll, then it was Al-Tariq today, and now it's you. Let me tell you something. Keep that up, because we need to... And now we got Terry and Erica. Let me say this. I need to hear solutions, and I'm going to give us as much time as we can get in this last 7 minutes. I say this. All that you just said, hey, how was your day? How are you? How'd it go? How's the weather? That's what I expect them to do. They're uncompassionate. They don't see us on the level of humanity, even if they see themselves on that, because money is their driving force. We're everybody's property. Even their wives are expendable. Even their children could be sold. How often have you heard of these people that have claimed to have been raped by somebody that was, their children have been raped by somebody that was a big star, and rather than go after the punishment, they waited it out to see if they can negotiate a deal that works for them to keep their kid in Spain in silence. Tell them to chuck it up. Michael Jackson, that was one. How often do you see them having their wives dressed in super sex symbol things? How often have you heard of sexual favors being put across the land between their own families for a bigger, better deal? Guess what? That's what they do. That's what we expect them to do. Any people that sit around and go after a community that's not looking in their direction, that would welcome them with open arms, that would help bandage their bleeding child because color is not a factor in their head, that's trying to do nothing but just feed their own children without having to impose on you, and they still find a need to constantly be watching what you're doing and putting them down and blowing them up and letting them smile in their face and get a little bit of a carrot stick while they turn around and blow up the garden that they planted the carrot stick in. I don't expect them to do a damn thing more than what animals do. So what are we going to do about it?
No, what are we going to do for the address of the social media issue someone brought up earlier is you don't have to, you are in control of what you like in, on Facebook or on Twitter or on Tumblr. I don't subscribe to any, you know, that nonsense, you know. On my pages and my news feed, you know, I'll post articles talking about these things. And I also post, you know, articles, petitions or whatever. And, you know, I also go out into the community and do stuff. You know, I'm get a limited income. I get Social Security, so there's only so much I can do, but at least I try. So, I try to go out and support community organizations. And I also don't fall into this trap of, well, we don't do anything, and we only fall for the okie doke, or I don't fall into that trap because there are a lot of black community organizations that are out there that do the stuff. But you know why they don't get any play? Because it's not negative. So they're
because we don't go out and support that.
fallen into this trap too, you know, that we don't do or we don't support. We do support, but it's who you choose to be around. You have, as you get older, you have to realize this. Everybody that's your skin folk ain't your kin folk, and you have to be with, you know, you can't help your family and your longtime friends, you know, because you may, we all have the Uncle Pookie or Aunt Cookie or whatever, our family. We all
you know, it's funny. I need so that.
Your influence, who you have in your circle. And also, you know, a lot of so-called conscious people, well, I don't want to work with the, you know, because the average black person, they don't get it, you know, they don't want to do this and they don't want to do that. I'm like, you got to meet people where they are. Some people may, you know, have an awakening one day and get what you've been talking about. Some people may never have it, but you got to meet them where they are. You can't put all these things, well, you got to do this and you have to do that. And then when they don't meet your expectations, then you say, well, all black, you know, all the black people, you know, they don't support this and they don't do that.
Absolutely. And what I meant by not supporting, I'm not talking about us physically not doing things for our people. I'm talking about not being outraged because of the fact that those people aren't being celebrated. And just to clarify something with you, it's not just your income that gives our contribution, sweetheart. It's doing the best you can with what you have.
Yeah,
it's
that's what I mean.
Putting your best foot forward. And you're doing great. You know what?
Mm-hmm.
I love these guys that's on the panel. Right now, I'm talking about the fellas because, Erica, you're brand new. Do you remember on the anniversary show, and guys, when I talk to you off the air, I often say this. I say I'm not looking to be a little fish in a big ocean. I don't want to be a Wendy Williams, and I know I'm not one. And all of you told me what? To hell with you being a Wendy Williams, you be a Katie Barnett.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what meant the world to me because that's what I can do. I don't have money either. I'm on a limited income as well. I'm a single mother struggling to try to do 8 million freelance jobs and my little supposed to be main job plus whatever on a daily basis. So when I'm sitting behind this mic and hosting, I'm hosting from what I'm living. I'm hosting from what I'm angry about and what I'm trying to do something about. And I'm trying to educate, as you said, Terry, those people who may not know.
Right.
Because that's, and once you do know, even the Bible says that's actually your task. That's your obligation. That's your assignment.
Right. Know better, you do better.
Exactly.
Yep, just planting
one
seeds. Just planting seeds.
I'm sorry, panelists, but we are down to the last couple of minutes. But I will say this. This is going to be part one of a two-part segment. So tomorrow, there will be part two to Peekaboo, Racism, I See You, I See You Not. So those of you, please return for whatever points we could not get out today. Please return tomorrow and try not to show up when there's only 10 minutes in the broadcast so you can get your full effect out. I'm not being funny. I'm dead serious. I would like to hear what you have to say without the rush of having to beat the network timer, okay? So all of you, join back. Terry, welcome, and thank you. Hakeem, welcome back. Boys, you three, and Erica, you know I always love you. You're like my newest gun charge. Al Tariq, You better go blow off that barrel and oil it again. I need you back here tomorrow. Patrick, you too. So you all have a great night. God bless you all, and I will see you here tomorrow. All right. Good night.
All right.
On the Edge, we'll talk about real issues.